Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to everyone, including John Bailey, who's already on the line with us. And John Bailey is the White Plains Citizenette reporter, publisher, and editor. Good morning, John. What a pleasure to have you on Monday.
Good morning.
It's a great way to start the week.
Yes, and you must be coming up on some sort of anniversary of the show, aren't you?
You know, to be honest, I don't even know. It's like I feel like I'm too busy to even reflect on the past. There's too much going on in the present, and then it's contemplating the future. Forget it. I'm totally wiped out.
Yes, you. Not only that, but you know, no philanthropic organization or governmental organization or civic organization in this county has given either of us a ceremonial gala.
You know, that would really be phenomenal. You know, I never went that far.
That would really be nice.
As you, John.
Yes. So anyway, we're open for sponsors of anniversary galas for the Yonkers Tribune and On the Level and White Plains Citizenette Reporter.
Absolutely.
We'll have
a
special operator taking your calls to volunteer.
You know, it never dawned on me, John, but you are absolutely brilliant. You know, I don't have the temerity to point that out, but you got the chutzpah, you know, which I think is great.
You know what? I think it is an absolute disgrace that people honor politicians who are not really doing a very good job, and they honor community leaders who basically support illegal housing. And, you know, it's stuff like that bothers me greatly. And I also don't like the fact that neighborhood associations who complain about developments and falsify what surveys say to support their points, they're just as bad as politicians. But anyway, I've had to get that nastiness out before we switch to love and grace for the rest of the show.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, okay. I feel forewarned, and I maybe should be advised, you know, not to go there.
That's right. This is going to be a good news show. So you can leave your radios on.
Oh, that you mean it's safe? Thank God for
that.
It's safe to listen.
Nowadays. We don't want to spoil politicians' Mondays, do we?
No, not at all.
We wouldn't want to do that.
Never on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Well, we should delve into some stuff that's really important, and I don't know what is. That's the problem. It seems that we talk about everything, and not you and I, but I think we talk to substance. But, you know, when we talk about the political game, the people that we've elected to office, the people that are already in office, the politicians that want to get into office, you know, they have such a good game going on, and I think the public is confused. We don't know what to expect.
Well, it's really fascinating. I mean, we always felt that George Latimer, when he, you know, said he would not run for a third term after this one, basically leaving the field wide open, that we thought
– yes.
Jared, after his lifetime of public service, wanted to sort of ride into the sunset on his paint pony and enjoy himself. But lo and behold, there is a survey out yesterday, a telephone survey, very extensive, about the June Democratic primary. And in a list of candidates that they ask you which one you would prefer to vote for, three of the big names, of course, are Jamal Bowman for the 16th District, Mike Spano, and George Latimer.
How did they put all these three people together? It's amazing.
What is going on here? And to my way of thinking, I think, we should ask Mr. Latimer, what's his name doing on there? The survey. Now, I asked the surveyor asked me about this. Wait a minute. Is Latimer declaring that he wants to run in the primary? We had never heard that, Would not say that. Would not say that. They weren't prepared.
Well, you know what it is? I really do.
It was a hypothetical question.
A lot of this is, I think it's just a hypothetical. It's based on nothing. I would be surprised. Why would George Latimer
lend his name to it?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I mean, he runs the Democrats. He is the leading Democrat in the state right now, as far as likability, electability, and he is the Teflon politician.
Yeah.
And now he appears in this. Now here's a scenario. Now this is he decides that to contend against Mike Spano and Jamal Bowman because that is Latimer's district, for God's sake. He represented everybody in Bowman's district since the Democrats conveniently re-gerrymandered the 16th election district, which Elliot Engel used to have. And they basically took out all the constituency that supported Bowman. Tinos, the blacks, and it's now basically a white district. I mean, all the way up to the northern Westchester border into the New South up there.
Right.
And to my way of thinking, this is really as bad as anything the Republicans are doing in Texas or anywhere else. The Democrats did not like the fact that Bowman came out of nowhere and defeated their longtime congressman who did the least in his three terms or 10 terms or wherever they were, Elliot Engel.
Yeah.
And Elliot Engel is also on the list of possible candidates. So Engel may be angling. He may be angling. Remember that. That's a pun.
Yeah, I will remember
to
that.
To take back his seat because they've gerrymandered it for him. However, with Mike Spano seeing it as a stepping stone to quite a lot of political hay, if he wins the seat, he could run for county executive. However, Mr. Latimer could run the primary, and I think he'd easily win, and for that district. And he runs, goes to Congress, and then in 2 years runs for the U.S. Senate. Clear path. You're not going to vote Mike Spano in the U.S. Senate. We have dumb senators.
Well, one thing for sure with Mike Spano, the mayor of Yonkers, I don't think he has an interest to go to Washington. I think he wants to stay where he is because the same rationale for maintaining his hold on Yonkers for the third four-year term is the same rationale that he want to run for a fourth four-year term. And what's interesting is that in the third fourth-year term that he did win, he was not permitted to do so because there was a referendum that forbade him to run for fourth-year term. But interestingly enough, he copied the conduct of the New York City City Council. And what they did was they were begging at that time Mr. Bloomberg to consider running again for a third term. And he capitulated and said, and he would, and because of that, they said, fine, then you got it. But the reason for that was because Bloomberg was so magnanimous. Actually, it was Bloomberg, through his own pocket, all the operations of New York City functioning, everything. Mm-hmm. He paid government operations money. He gave it to you know, places that you would normally donate to that were falling apart. He held the entire city in his pocketbook, and he gave. But he also, Bloomberg said that it was the worst thing he could have ever done. He was not pleased for a third, a fourth year term. But that was it. And interestingly enough, though, I don't think the mayor has the capacity, nor will he be voted into the, a congressional seat at all. And he wants to stay here. And because the same reason for Mayor Mike Spano to run again in New York, in Yonkers, is the same rationale for him needing to stay in Yonkers for the last 4 years, because he needs to control the city. And he controls the city by giving jobs. And do you know how it works in Yonkers, which is interesting? Most people don't recognize it or refuse to recognize it. We've got 5,000 people, 5,000, who work at the city of Yonkers. They are all married, whether to an opposite sex spouse or someone of the same sex. It doesn't matter. And the reason we can say that they're all married is because they're predominantly 50 to 60 years of age. Among them, they have a relationship of some sort. So the one that's employed by the city, whether it be at the Board of Education or the city of Yonkers, has a spouse. So now, instead of 5,000 people voting for the mayor, it will be 5 to 10,000 people who will be voting for the mayor. And because we're between 50 and 60 years of age, we have children. Yep. Again, through regular conceptual process, you know, between a husband and a wife, or people get kids, you know, that they take care of, and you know, adopt them. So the point is, you've got now at minimum another child for each couple. So now, three times the employee. That means instead of 5,000, you got 15,000 people. Do you know how much it took to vote the mayor in last time he ran? Only 13,000 votes. 13,000.
So he has already essentially bought the election, so to speak.
Exactly. And it's been going on for years. It's not the first time that this has happened. And it will continue to go that way, because it's all about a patronage job in the city of Yonkers. It may be the same in other places too, but not to the extent that it is here in Yonkers.
Well, we have the same situation in White Plains.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah, the Democrats control the whole political process. They dominate in registration, and you know, we will never have another Republican mayor unless the Republican Party starts trying to create a new image for itself, or at least get some members in it. I mean, they don't even run people.
Well,
and,
in the last election here in Yonkers, the Republican Party, I thought, was dead, because I never heard a thing from them. Oh, they've been quiet anyway. They were always hiding behind the scenes. You know, they thought they had clout. They don't have anything. If they didn't have a candidate running for, they had a candidate running for the Yonkers City Council. Those people at the Republican Party never even came out to endorse a Republican candidate. You believe this? It's insanity.
Yeah, I mean, there's no opposition. You realize every time we have a common council meeting and we have the opportunity for people to come out and speak at hearings and on legislation issues, no Republicans come out and criticize what the Common Council is proposing to do. And I find that that is your first step to being contentive and rebuilding a political presence to come up in a rational, fair, fact-based way, criticize legislation that is perhaps too sloppily written. You know, you never can tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you do a anti gas-powered leaf blowing regulation and not specify who is really going to pay for it if the violator, the professional organization, is violating and refuses to change? It appears that the owner of the property is the one that's going to have to pay the fines. But, you know, that is unbelievable. You cannot trace it on back to the homeowner, because your homeowner has probably been using a landscaper for years who has been blowing, using gas-powered equipment for years. Mm-hmm. And if he wants to continue doing your lawn, and he is cited by various core of city officials who are able to enforce it, and he decides he's not going to do it, what is going to happen? They are going to come after the homeowner. I cannot believe that. That is really legislation.
It's stupid legislation, and there won't be an uproar until enough people get fined for it, and they're going to have to pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that most likely the people that hire these contract landscapers, they're not around when they come in and clean up the lawn. For them, they have no clue. They're not there. They're working.
They're not. They have a year to make this changeover. In other words, next fall. Mm. Now, all this happened when they put in the law you couldn't burn leaves.
Right. I remember that.
Right. And so now we have an enormous operation using pickup trucks and catch-alls to pick up the leaves all fall long here in White Plains. This was going on for years. And it's ludicrous.
It is ludicrous. It's probably a better way. Instead of burning it, we probably should pick it up and put it in some sort of a silo where it could be decomposed and used as fertilizer. Don't they know how to do this yet?
Yeah, maybe they do. No, I think they do that. They bring it over to the dump and they make compost out of it. But to my way of thinking, why not tell the citizens you're responsible for raking your leaves and put them in a fourth garbage receptacle that we now have to do? We now have three receptacles in White Plains that we have to put out on differing days for them to do their recycling garbage pickup. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
So why not have a fourth can for leaves?
I think that's a great idea.
Now, that would be the intelligent way of doing it. Then we don't have to mark up the streets, and we don't have to have the dangerous traffic situation. But anyway, that's a minor problem in White Plains. But that's what went for breakthrough legislation last week at the White Plains Common Council, this new ordinance, which also...
Well, one thing is interesting. A guy by the name of Vedat Gashi from Yorktown, extremely successful lawyer, got all the money that he needs to run his own campaign. And he's running for political office. And it's very likely that he will be, well, it is, he's already filed. We reported it last week. And then somebody else reported it yesterday. He's running for Bowman's seat. So I think a young guy from Yorktown, great credentials, brilliant man, could represent the city and the entire county, actually, the new district lines. And I think he will do very well, and likely he'll win, which knocks out Mike Spano as a possible contender. And I think it will also knock out George Latimer, who would rather stay in White Plains than do anything more. Because he's making a name for himself here. He doesn't need to go on and go to Washington. He'd rather probably stay here in Westchester County. There's just no point.
Mm.
So,
right. So you see, he is running for the.
He's running for Bowman.
What is
seat.
It? For what seat now?
For Bowman seat, district.
16. Ah, the Bowman. Right. Okay, 16th district. Yes. Well, his name was on the list of possible candidates to vote for, and I didn't even know the name. That is his problem.
He wasn't known before, but the point is, it's such a weird name for a lot of people. It's an Albanian name. He came here when he was 4 years of age, so he's been raised in America by his parents, and that's it. So he's a very, very good lawyer, so I think he'll do very well, and people will remember his name.
If he can buy enough commercials, that might work.
Well, okay, everything. It's all promotion, and hopefully he'll get on radio and he'll get on television, and he'll be able to give expression to his thoughts. But I don't think
he sounds like the male Zephyr Teachout.
Well, I don't know if he's. I don't know his exact position in. Teachout's a failure. I don't know what it is.
She was very popular. She was a darling of the media because of her maverick candidacy, and she had a lot of media visuality, but she still did not come close.
No, she didn't. I don't think she connected with the public. I don't know. I think that she was too abrasive, or maybe her message was too abrasive at the time. And now she's languished to the point where I don't think anyone even thinks about her anymore.
Once you lose big, unless you're a Republican woman who is run simply so the Republicans can show that they really have some kind of respect for women, you don't get to run again. But there's a long list of Republican women who run for positions they could not possibly win because they were unknowns and got to run again even though they lost. But this is the problem. Women have to realize that they have to stop allowing themselves to be patronized politically.
I don't know why they're not getting that sort of message. You would think that they would.
Look what has happened to Kamala Harris.
Oh, God.
My God.
She's like
Nixon.
Beginning.
She's being sent to kitchen exhibitions in Moscow.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know,
embarrassment.
Find her compelling.
Yeah.
She is
an embarrassment.
And I don't know. And she's not.
They are not operating as a
whatsoever.
Team. Biden has no idea how to administrate. That is his big problem, and it really shows. He bungles the Afghanistan pullout. That is really going to cost him big time. I know it does with me.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Governor Hochul should really complain about being lumped as. A politician much like Biden. I mean, she's not at all like Biden. She actually can make decisions that work based on the facts.
I think she's
what a refreshing breath of fresh air. And it'll be interesting to see what the Democrats who are living in the past and trying to support horrible politicians like Engel, and like I think they want also to get that guy Klein back in, and the survey. Well, he was an old boy, Democrats have their old boys too, a lot of old boys. And the intriguing thing about the situation of that survey yesterday is they set up really nasty opinion questions about Mr. Bowman, and try and lumped him as being part of the Ocasio-Cortez situations. I mean, they are assaulting Democratic newcomers, young, perhaps outspoken, but they are standing their ground on important issues. And I don't hear the Democrats really coming after the voting rights problems that we're facing in this country. They just did it in their gerrymandering process in New York State. I mean, these people who are running the Democratic Party are not being smart. Bowman won because the public suddenly realized that Elliot Engel was taking them for granted and didn't give a damn about them. That's why Bowman won. And the Democrats don't want this to happen. I mean, they love the idea of just going into winning office and then having a nice safe seat for 30 years of doing nothing and getting all sorts of contributions. And then even if they lose, they can go and lobby for the people who gave them all those contributions. That's a political career. I mean, can you imagine what a lobbyist George Latimer would make?
Oh, God.
He would be insanely successful as a lobbyist.
Yeah, he would be.
I mean, you know, but so, I don't think he wants to.
What you speak about, unfortunately, we only have like about 3 minutes left, but what you bring forward is that our whole political infrastructure has decayed to the point where it's now a job, it's all about money, and there's very little connection with the public interest, whether Republican or Democrat.
You have to connect with power brokers.
Yes, that's the problem. I don't know if that could be corrected anywhere.
Well, you know, not anytime soon. I mean,
if you see Bowman go,
and the next target is Mondaire Jones, you know, that's the next target. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But people seem to
I think they rejiggered his district, too.
Well, I think they like Mondaire Jones a lot more than they like Bowman. I don't know. Bowman somehow rubbed people the wrong way, and I don't know why that was.
Well, anybody who defeats an incumbent Democrat in a primary rubs the whole party the wrong way because he or she is a danger to them. Now, could Ocasio-Cortez been a little bit more politically acceptable and touchy-feely in her first term? Of course. But she's young and restless and impatient. And we have, Murkowski. Look at Murkowski, the woman Republican, absolutely coming down on the side of stupidity. I think she made a statement about a mask. But, I mean, and Susan and Collins of Maine, I mean, those are phonies. And
that's a problem. A lot of the politicians, they get desperate when they realize that their time is coming up, and so they don't know what to do.
Right, and they don't have any conviction of. They're not run by the voice of right in their heads.
We're gonna save all more of the juicy part till next week. Because our next guest is on. So all the best to you. Happy Valentine's Day. Enjoy life.
Yes, yes. And
thanks
love
so
and
much.
Peace to all. Bye for now.
Take care. Goodbye. Well, there we are. None other than Michael Edelman is on the line. He's a political analyst and pundit. Let me see. I think I made one mistake here. I think he's already on. Now he's on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jose.
Michael.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. Well, I'm so glad to speak to you because there's so much on the plate, and I barely know where to begin. But
let me start with a thought. Let me start with a thought today.
Okay.
Donald Trump is done. Republicans are meeting as we speak. Major Republicans in the nation, senators and leaders of the party, are meeting because that's enough of Donald Trump. They believe they're going to lose elections in 2022 at the congressional and senatorial level if Donald Trump is allowed to continue to condemn some candidates and endorse others solely on the basis of whether they agree with him that 220 was a stolen election. So let me start with that thought. Donald Trump is on the way out. Mike Pence started it off a week ago by saying Trump was wrong, and other people followed, and you watch what happens.
So does that give us an opportunity even to consider Mike Pence? Because he took a chance, but the point is he stood by his convictions, and he knew what was going on.
Yes,
why did
it
take so long? Is it because the party system is such that they don't even allow individuals to be able to give expression to what was? Is that a problem on both sides of the aisle?
Yeah, I guess. Do you remember the story about the emperor's clothes?
Yes.
He was naked, and everybody was too scared to say he was naked except one little boy who didn't know any better. And he went, Mommy, Mommy, the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
Everybody fell in line. But before that, they were intimidated, too scared to tell the truth. That's exactly what's happening here. People were cowed by Donald Trump's aggressiveness and his ability to go out and have rallies and rally the base. Okay, but now Republicans understand that it's a problem for them. Because if the only people that are going to be fit candidates to run for office at the senatorial and congressional level this year are people who Donald Trump supports and who subscribe to the notion that there was election fraud in 2020, they could lose the House and lose the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it. And they know it. So it's time. You're watching cracks in the ceiling. And they're getting rid of Donald Trump, and they'll do it in due time.
Well, if they're getting rid of Donald Trump and he's on the way out, is it conceivable? It seemed like it was heading towards the direction where the Republicans were getting a little bit of a rise in notoriety and notice, and the Democrats have been waning. Does this give an opportunity for the Democrats to resuscitate themselves, or is it really the role now of the Republicans to make a go of it? Because there's a lot of animosity with regard to the Biden administration at the moment.
Well,
yes,
recent polling showed two things. It showed, number one, Democrats preferred somebody other than Joe Biden to be the nominee, but for different
they don't
reasons.
Know who.
That, but that's not the point. The point is, if he doesn't have a lot of support, just as Jimmy Carter didn't, and Ted Kennedy almost took him down, he's going to be 82. So the reason people gave wasn't so much policy and performance, that I'm talking about Democrats, it was his age.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with that. Trump, on the other hand, had as many people in his party saying they didn't want him to be the nominee. Had nothing to do with his age. Had to do with his
arrogance
and the fact that they they didn't want to look back. They wanted to look forward. And one by one, including Lindsey Graham, they're falling in line saying, we're going to lose if we look back at the 2020 election and keep trying to use our grievances as the basis upon which to run. So I'm telling you, they're going to get rid of Donald Trump, and he's going to go kicking and screaming.
I'm sure he will. That's the way he is. But does that say something positive about our political system in America? Because I think in another place he would have become the dictator of the nation, but somehow here he lost, And now he's being expunged, even though it's taken a little bit longer than one would have expected. So does the system work in America? It seems to be.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. The system works. The system held. And you know why it held? It held because Republican office holders in Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia didn't want anything to do with a claim of fraud when they knew there was none.
Okay.
And so, Brad Raffensperger, you lost the state. Secretary of State, you lost the state. Guys in Pennsylvania, you lost the state. The Arizona, head of the Arizona, you lost the state. He lost. Get on with your life. Either run again or, you know, sell the merchandise that you're taking money. He just had a fundraiser in Tampa. And you know where the money went? It didn't go to his political committee. It went to him. Because he's been grifting since he ran. It's all about how to make money for him and his kids. That's what it's all about. It's not about protecting the interests of the nation.
Wow. What happens to all the people that supported the likes of the former President Trump? Where do they go? Because they don't have someone of his temerity, of his chutzpah, so to speak, of his, you know, his way of speaking, demeaning people at the same time, you know, firing him here, firing him there.
Yeah.
Where do they go?
Yeah.
Because he was like a movie star, and he was able to berate people, and they loved it.
He was a celebrity.
I know how he got.
He was a celebrity that acted like no other politician has ever acted, and he tried to seize power. He tried to overturn the results of the election, and these people, the base of the party that supports him, they're just going to have to figure out who they want to support. Maybe Ron DeSantis, you know, maybe Ted Cruz, maybe Greg Abbott, maybe somebody else.
Yeah.
But as long as it's not Donald Trump.
And on the Democratic side of the ticket, it doesn't seem like Kamala Harris has got, you know, a lot of strength to even be considered as a presidential candidate. But does a woman have a possibility and a potential, someone who knows, you know, I don't know, like I think Kathy Hochul is a breath of fresh air in New York State. She may not conform to every concept of every Democrat or even Republicans, but she seems to be an exceptional leader. She's on target. She's responsive. And she's not combative, and yet she tells it the way it is. Do we have women like that on the national platform for Democrats?
Well, I would say Kamala Harris has been a big disappointment.
Everybody
thought that she'd be a good fit with Biden, female, woman of color, senator, but she just doesn't seem to be able to rise to the level of vice president. So I suspect it'll be a wide open primary. Biden says, I'm not running. Right?
Amazing.
So Joe Biden says, I'm
absolutely
not running. They're not going to automatically crown Kamala Harris, because they know she's a very weak candidate. Other people will emerge.
Yeah, I guess it's going to take time, and we'll have to see who rises to the top. Amazing.
Exactly.
Does this give a bump to Clinton?
Hillary Clinton?
You think that give? Sorry.
No, she's not. Hillary Clinton?
Hillary.
She's not going to run.
You think it'll? But it doesn't give her a bump up, does it?
I don't see. The only thing that gives Hillary a bump, to be perfectly honest, is this recent revelation that Donald Trump flushed down the toilet of the White House or toilet of the White House documents that he was obliged to save. that had confidential, top secret information in them. And that, in terms of Hillary Clinton's emails, one was reckless. Clinton was reckless in not making sure she had an email server that was safe and secure.
Yes.
But Donald Trump's actions were intentional.
Yeah. Well, so everything is up in the air right now. Did you imagine that this would come about? I mean, it seemed like Trump was holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
And he had it under its control. How did he really lose it? Do we know?
Well, he lost it because he insisted on a falsity. He insisted that there was fraud in 2020, and there was not. And he insisted other people agree with him, and they would not.
Thank you.
Free and fair.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Sorry about that.
So the election was free and fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so he could not accept that he lost.
Mm-hmm.
He insisted that everybody in the Republican Party told that line, that there was fraud in the election, and there was not.
Does that mean also that there needs to be some sort of oversight to preclude this sort of happening again? Or it was just a scandal that took place because of the likes of a Trump? Is there any way to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
Well, look, what you're asking is having to do with whether a strong man can rise in the United States under the present system. And I believe it's quite possible, because I think that base Republicans, and even extending that out a little bit, they understand there's a demographic change coming to the country, that it'll be a minority-majority nation, that people of color will outnumber white voters, and they're scared to death of it, because it's never been that way. And because of that, that's the reason Trump is able to do what he was able to do.
So how do we appease or the people who voted for someone like Trump? How do we get them reengaged in the political system where they feel that they're being represented, other than with a strongman tactic, you know, with his demeanor that castigates everyone as a fool or I don't know, corrupted somehow or another?
Is our system
rife for that? Can we handle that?
Well, I don't know if we can or not. I think the democracy has been tested, and it'll be tested again. And, you know, this business about restricting voting all over the country, I think it's going to backfire. I think, they're going to make it harder for blacks and minorities to vote. But you know what? They're going to make it more important and that they come out and stand online for 3 hours and do what they have to do. They were willing to do it in 2020, and they're going to do it again.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it'll
who's
be
behind,
harder.
Who's behind this? What political concoction is out there to try to undermine blacks having a right to vote or being dissuaded from voting or not giving a glass of water because people are waiting in line for 3 hours? I couldn't be standing for 3 hours online to vote. I mean, my physical condition is deteriorated.
Yeah,
I couldn't
but you
do
could
that.
You could be sitting. You could be sitting.
I could, yes.
You carry
I could carry
a chair with you. Yeah.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is there's an effort across the country to make it harder for people to vote in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But that is going to, I think, exacerbate the willingness of Democrats to go out and do what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in it's spite
really
of the fact that
people.
It's going to be tougher. It'll be tougher.
Yeah.
So instead of driving to vote in a drop box in their county, they'll go to another county and do it. They'll do whatever they have to do to make sure their vote counts.
Okay. And what about the bigotry of the country? I read this morning another someone of Orient, of an Oriental nation background, as an Oriental background, was killed.
Yeah.
What's going on? Or is that uniquely, this is New York City. We have a large Oriental community of people, Chinese, Japanese. I think most people can't tell the difference between one or the other. I'm usually pretty good. I could tell if you're Chinese or Japanese, but I couldn't tell the difference between someone who's Korean. But what's happening to the country? Why are we at each other's throats like that? Is there such vengeance? What are we trying to get out of this? Or is it just people who are nuts?
I'm not familiar with what happened to that Asian American person in New York, but there has been some. There's been a rise in anti-Asian American sentiment. You know, this is what always happens. This is what happens when populist movements arise, and when their sole premise is owning the libs and taking down the people they perceive as having more education than they do. It's all about, you know, Asian Americans go to school. They get degrees.
Yes, they do.
They get advanced degrees. They're great in science and math,
absolutely,
and engineering. And the people in the middle of this country don't care about education. They only care about Friday night football. So they take take jobs that require very little education, but a lot of work, mining, being on the assembly line in a Ford Motor Company, other jobs that require physical labor. And they are very, very jealous. People who go to school, get degrees, and get these white-collar jobs that pay four or five times what they are making a year. And it comes down to that. That's what this anti-science was all about. This attack on Fauci, he's been a doctor through six administrations, but guys like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and other right-wing Republicans feel it's okay to attack him because he represents science. And they know that if they attack somebody who represents science, they're going to have a following with the base of the party, and that's why they're doing it.
Wow. So can we expect a realignment of the party system? Are we going to get an emboldened Democratic Party? Are we going to get a reinvigorated and emboldened Republican Party without Trump at the helm? Does it look like Pence could be the one that be the next forebearer at the front? Or is that still uncertain?
Pence will not get the nomination because there's enough people in the party that believe that Mike Pence didn't do
enough.
Okay, because they're listening to Donald Trump. They're listening to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. But is there a way? You know, look, all I know is that there is a pecking order wherever you go. There's a pecking order at home with a person you love, whether it be a wife or a husband, a gay, straight, or whatever, or a dog. And you know, we all submit to some sort of a hierarchy, same thing in government. You know, the top dog is the one we all follow. We do. We don't. We're not so detrimental to them. We're not in their face because we know we're not going to survive if we are. Is there a way to get around this system or is this not? It doesn't work, does it? That's why there's so many autocratic governments around the world. That's what always seemed to be the case with Donald Trump. He was an autocrat. That's who he was. He ran it
that's
like
right.
it was
that's
his own
who,
show.
That's right. That's the point is Donald Trump didn't become president to lead the nation. That's not why he became president. He had no idea he was going to win that election. But when he did, to take advantage of the opportunity to make all kinds of money. And he's a grifter. And he grifted onto the scene, and his whole rationale, was let me see how much I can make as quick as I can make it, whether it's in my hotels or by sending out these fundraising letters, pleading for money, telling people that, you know, the country depends on it, and blah, 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 blah. Okay? And that's the way he operated. And now roosters are coming home because they're finding out every day with these subpoenas that the January 6th Commission is handing out. Not only did he tell Mike Pence to do something that was unconstitutional, but he actually attempted to overturn the results of the election. He knew what the results were, but he thought he could overturn it.
Yeah.
But there was never a way to speed this process up, was there?
No.
Did it take the nation time to even conceive that this was going on? It could have been number of people originally.
Half the nation believes Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's think
about
that.
It's hard to move the equation forward. Right, exactly.
That's correct. You have an ex-president who is constantly lying, and you have people that follow him, and that's it.
Yep. That's the process. So I guess it's a normal standard. This is the way things will happen. It doesn't matter what part of the world, one way or the other. Some parts of the world, you'll never get to this conclusion.
Correct.
This is huge. This is probably the biggest story of the century. Unbelievable.
Well, it will be once we get to the point where there are a sufficient number of Republicans that say he's not wearing any clothes. That's what we need. Now they're meeting now, as I said at the beginning of the show, and if they come out with a joint statement, or if one by one they start falling in line and saying the election was, there was no fraud in 2020. Donald Trump was beaten fair and square. Okay? And then his supporters are going to have to sit back and assess what they've been believing all this time and whether or not they can change their beliefs. Because don't forget, once people believe, the stories, it's very difficult to disabuse them of what they already believe.
Exactly. What about the prospect of Liz Cheney? She's been ostracized, demonized, and practically thrown out the door. Does she get a bump up, assuming this all happens?
Well,
or is that, again, hard to convince people that she was in the right?
That's right. Yeah, once they have these preconceived notions and they watch Fox News day and night, and they listen to Donald Trump and others like him, she's got a primary in her state. Where she's never had an issue, right? She's never had an issue because her name is Cheney and she comes from Wyoming. But now the Republicans have read her out of the party, not only nationally, but she's got a primary in Wyoming. Okay, but it doesn't make a difference because Donald Trump decides he wants to run again, which will be a very poor decision, a very poor business decision. By a guy who's going to be indicted in multiple jurisdictions for multiple felonies. But if he should make that decision, he has to understand that there will be a third party composed of either Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney, or both running for president and or vice president as a ticket. And they will siphon Republican votes away from him, making it impossible for a Republican to win.
Hmm. Wow. Boy, what an unbelievable scenario we've come to. Amazing, amazing. What about the prospect of Jared Kushner? I hear he's being considered potential winner of, some award. I forgot what it was now, a Nobel Peace Prize or something like that. Has he been able to rise up above the fray somehow?
Jared Kushner? What?
Yeah.
Who nominated him for a Nobel Prize?
They haven't nominated him, but there's talk about it all of a sudden.
Oh, that's a lot of bullshit.
In an article today.
Why? Because of the Abraham Accords?
Yeah, that's what they're talking about.
Well, no. Nothing at all about that.
Okay.
That's just speculation.
I couldn't see it either.
Jared Kushner is a spoiled brat. who's basically messed up everything he's ever touched because he's arrogant.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I just never understood what they saw in him. I guess just they saw Donald Trump. So that's where it goes. What about this thing that I did find really interesting? This guy named David McCormick. He's a former CEO of Bridgewater Associates. He's running for a Pennsylvania U.S. Senate seat. He's going to air a 30-second commercial, which I guess was only seen locally in the state of Pennsylvania, and it was going to be a promotion of Let's Go Brandon. Where does this animosity and this vitriol come from, you know, where somebody is so willing to ride on this sort of stuff? Is this politics? Is this the new politics of the day? It used to be about
issues. You know that Let's Go Brandon is a
it's a pejorative.
I guess it's
go F yourself.
Well, that's right. No, it means F Joe Biden specifically.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So Car Group. This is an appeal to the folks that speak like this and talk like this daily and get a big kick when their Republicans like Donald Trump, you know, say, hit him in the face, head drag him out of the thing. This is all a continuation of that. Okay. And, it's not going to help him in the general election in Pennsylvania. That's the thing. You see, it may help him in the Republican primary. I don't know whether it will or won't, but it won't help him. It's not going to help him in the general election. It's going to kill him.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's what I think. I think they've overplayed the card. I mean, they keep playing it,
well,
but
it
just doesn't seem it's waning. Yeah. Unbelievable. One last thing. There's a woman by the name of, she's a judge, Michelle Child.
From
Biden
South Carolina.
Has chosen her. Yeah.
Correct.
What are her prospects? It looks pretty good. Even Lindsey Graham said it looks like he would support her. What's going on?
Here's why. Yeah. Everybody on the Supreme Court is Yale, Harvard, right?
Yes, right.
She went to the University of South Carolina. So she is not an Ivy Leaguer. She's got, you know, experience as a regular human being going to a state university and then going to law school. Mm. And she's a very, very centrist, leaning left, but centrist judge. And essentially, Lindsey Graham promised 60 votes for her.
Yeah.
If she's nominated. So the other thing is that Clyburn, this is a South Carolina judge. And the person most responsible for Joe Biden's election is Representative Clyburn from South Carolina. So in any way you slice this, Joe Biden wins if he picks this woman.
Okay.
He wins. He doesn't get a problem
Republican
with the Senate.
And Democrat.
Yeah. Doesn't get a problem confirmation, right? And he doesn't get a – she gets a free pass. So, I mean, obviously it's the way he should go from a political point of view. I don't know what other promises he made to anybody else, but this clearly appears to be the way to go.
Very, very exciting. Well, you've hit all the right buttons. I couldn't have done a better job than you, as you well know. So this is very, very – thank you so much for your half hour, and I'm glad we started off as we did.
Okay,
it's always something for an old man like me to get to learn. Thank you. Have a great week. All the best. Thank you. Well, there we have it, folks, none other than Michael Edelman. He's a national political analyst and pundit. I mean, he does it all. It doesn't get better than him. So always a pleasure to talk to him. And so insightful and so ahead of the curve. He must know everybody, or rather everybody knows him. And it's just phenomenal. And that he makes the time for us and our audience is always very, very compelling. And so I'm most appreciative for sure. Well, let's look at what else is happening on the world stage, because a lot is happening on the world stage. And this is very, very interesting. Russia is keeping its doors open for diplomacy as Ukraine is hinting that there might be some concessions. So this is very, very interesting. Well, it seems that a couple of bullet points. Envoy says concessions are available, but not on the NATO bid. Also, major share markets have been rattled. Oil surges to a 9-year high. Germany's Scholz is in Kiev. Then he moves on to Moscow on Tuesday. The G7 says that invasion will trigger a massive economic reprisal. And Putin tells Biden that the U.S. response does not meet Russian demands. So here we're going to hear from Moscow and Kiev. Russia suggested on Monday that it was ready to keep talking to the West to try to defuse a security crisis in which it has massed a huge force within striking distance of Ukraine, while a Ukrainian official said that Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, was prepared to make concessions to Moscow. In a televised exchange, President Vladimir Putin of Russia was shown asking his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, whether there was a chance of an agreement to address Russia's security concerns or whether it was just being dragged into torturous negotiations. Well, Lavrov replied, quote, "We have already warned more than once that we will not allow endless negotiations on questions that demand a solution today." But he added, quote, "It seems to me that our possibilities are far more exhausted. At this stage, I would suggest continuing and building them up." Well, Washington has Russia or has said that Russia would invade Ukraine any day now. Some have said by tomorrow, by Wednesday, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Monday called the situation very, very dangerous. Russia has positioned more than 100,000 troops near to Ukraine's borders, but denies planning to invade, accusing the West of hysteria. Now, earlier in the day, the group of seven large Western economic or G7 countries had warned Russia of, quote, massive, end quote, economic consequences if it did invade and promised Kiev swift support. Well, Ukraine's ambassador to Britain backtracked on remarks suggesting that Kiev would reconsider its attempt to join NATO, one of Russia's primary concerns, but did say that other concessions could be on offer. "We are not a member of NATO right now, and to avoid war, we are ready for many concessions, and that is what we are doing in conversations with the Russians," he told the BBC in a clarification. "It has nothing to do with NATO, which membership application is enshrined in the Constitution." Well, the Kremlin said that if Ukraine renounced its aspiration to join the Western military alliance, it would significantly help address Russia's concerns. Moscow has made it clear it sees the former Soviet Republic's quest for closer ties with the West, notably through NATO, as a threat. 8 years ago, mass protests on Kiev's Maidan Square in favor of closer integration with the West forced out the pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych. Faced with the ascendancy of pro-Western politicians promising to advance democracy and fight corruption just across its border, Russia captured and then annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, home to the Russian Black Sea Fleet. It also supported pro-Russian rebels who have seized part of Ukraine's industrial, largely Russian-speaking east in a war that is still adding to its toll of more than 14,000 lives lost. Now, the G7 finance minister said that fresh military aggression by Russia against Ukraine would trigger, quote, economic and financial sanctions, which will have massive and immediate consequences to the Russian economy. Even though people are saying Putin couldn't care less about all these issues that the West wants to throw at him, but talk of diplomatic efforts continuing brought the price of crude oil down off the seven-year highs it had hit earlier amid concerns that sanctions would disrupt exports from Russia, a major producer in an already tight market. The major European stock markets slumped by 2.0% and 3.5% before making up some of their losses, as did Russian and Ukrainian bonds. Sanctions could ultimately rebound on Western powers, which rely heavily on Russia for energy supplies, notably gas, as well as other raw materials. European banks in particular fear that Russia could be excluded from the SWIFT global payment system, which would prevent the repayment of Russian debts. KLM has halted flights to Ukraine and through its airspace, while Germany's Lufthansa said it was considering a suspension, and British Airways flights appeared on Monday to be avoiding Ukrainian airspace. Ukraine International Airlines, the country's biggest carrier, said insurers had told it they would no longer cover its flights in Ukrainian airspace. And then we have the Scholz visit. Lavrov told Putin the United States had put forward concrete proposals on reducing military risks, but that responses from NATO and the European Union, which has been at pains not to let Moscow divide its members, had not been satisfactory. None of my fellow ministers responded to my direct message, Lavrov had said. Quote, therefore, we will continue to seek a concrete response from each country. A European Union official who asked not to be named but has spoken to Putin by phone in the past said that United States talks with Russia were yielding little. Quote, Russia is trying to demonstrate that it is the policeman in the region, the source had said. The criticism by Moscow against Ukraine is this idea that the people made a choice for liberal democracy, values, principles, and freedoms. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz held talks with Kiev with President Volodymyr Zelensky to be followed on Tuesday by a meeting with Putin in Moscow. He told reporters he saw, quote, no reasonable justification, end quote, for Russia's military activity on Ukraine's border and that Russia should accept offers to discuss European security. He announced a credit of 150 million euros, that's $170 million for Ukraine. While Zelensky affirmed that Ukraine still wanted to join NATO, Scholz said it was strange that Russia had raised the issue now when it was, quote, not on the agenda. Kiev has long resented the Russian-German Nord Stream 2 project, a pipeline that will allow Russia to circumvent Ukraine in exporting gas to Germany, and has bristled at Germany's refusal to join other NATO partners in selling it weapons. Germany did, however, begin sending troops on Monday to help NATO member Lithuania bolster NATO's border with Russia. Reporting was conducted by Dmitry Antonov and Maria Kiselyova in Moscow, Natalia Zinets in Kiev, Guy Falconbridge in London, Thomas Esprit in Berlin, Chen Lin in Singapore, Shreyashi Sanyal, Anisha Sirkar, and Muvia M. in Bengaluru, and writing by Kevin Liffey, editing by Andrew Cawthon, John Boyle, and Allison Williams, and written, of course, by the Thomson Reuters. So this is what's so compelling about what's going on here. Now, one second. All right, let me move back. One second here. One second here. All right, one moment. Ah. Yeah, this is what I wanted to get back to. German troops have arrived to reinforce the Baltics amid tensions over Ukraine. It seems that from Kaunas Airport in Lithuania, a German military aircraft carrying troop reinforcements landed in Lithuania on Monday, the first of several reinforcements. Troop reinforcements landed in Lithuania on Monday, the first of several planned NATO deployments amid fears in the region about a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine. The A400M airplane carried around 70 soldiers and what is expected to grow to a 360-strong German deployment, which comes on top of existing NATO forces in the region. A spokesperson for the alliance's Enhanced Forward Presence Battle Group had said, well, the new deployments include reconnaissance and artillery, troops and medics from units throughout Germany, as well as around 100 howitzer and other vehicles, with arrivals expected to continue throughout the week. It's a strong signal that Germany is willing and capable of reinforcing the battle group immediately as needed, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Andrae, a German commander of the NATO troops in Lithuania, told reporters. Quote, I am really happy to have the guys with me and be ready for everything which could come up, Andrae had added. The added soldiers will stay as long as they are needed, he said. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was due to arrive in Kiev on Monday to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in a bid to show solidarity and help avert war. On Tuesday, Scholz will fly to Moscow to see Russian President Vladimir Putin. Since 2017, NATO has deployed battle groups in Baltic states of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, as well as Poland, all sharing borders with Russia in response to Moscow annexing the Crimea Peninsula from Ukraine in 2014. Now, totaling 5,000 soldiers, the battle groups are led by Germany, Canada, Britain, and the United States. Britain is also preparing to Britain is also preparing to reinforce the British-led NATO battle group in Estonia, Prime Minister Boris Johnson had said last week, and German soldiers comprise about half of the 1,100-strong battle group already present in Lithuania, which includes troops from Belgium, the Czech Republic, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and Norway. Germany's decision to send more troops to Lithuania is an important and timely decision, which shows that NATO's solidarity, unity, and commitment to collective defense, said Lithuanian Defense Minister Arvydas Anušauskas. Well, reporting on this was by Andrius Sitas, writing by Kerže Soldvik, and Andrius Sitas, editing by Guladis Fuchs, Mark Heinrich, and Toby Chopra. Again, this is part of the Thomson Reuters news system. Okay. One second. And this is interesting as well. Ukraine will receive Stinger anti-aircraft missiles within days, the Lithuanian Prime Minister had said. Ukraine will receive Stinger anti-aircraft missiles from Lithuania within days, Lithuanian Prime Minister Ingrida Šimonytė said on a visit to Kiev on Thursday. Ukraine has received plane loads of military aid from NATO country allies in recent weeks to shore up its defenses after Russia massed more than 100,000 troops near Ukraine's borders. We are increasing the number of military instructors in the country and providing Ukraine with additional weapons and equipment, Šimonytė had said. Stinger anti-aircraft missiles from Lithuania will reach Ukraine in the coming days. I hope and sincerely wish that Ukraine never has to use them. Again, here reporting by Matthias Williams and Natalia Zinitz, editing by Catherine Evans, to contend with. And this is really quite interesting as well. It seems that Russia will not attend this year's Munich Security Conference, so says the event chair. Out of Berlin, we hear that the Russian government has decided to not send a representative to this year's Munich Security Conference, said Wolfgang Ischinger, who chairs the event that will start on February 18th. The conference, known as Davos for Defense, brings together the world's defense and security elite in Germany. It comes as a sensitive time, with the United States warning of an imminent Russian invasion of Ukraine. So we'll have to see where all that goes. It's going to be very, very compelling to see what goes on there. This is very interesting with regard to Canada. Canada's Trudeau is going to invoke a rarely used emergency power and protest, so says the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is written by Steve Scherer and David Ljunggren. Well, out of Ottawa, we hear that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau will invoke rarely used special measures allowing him to tackle protests that have shut some border crossings and paralyzed downtown Ottawa, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation said on Monday. The CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, said that Trudeau had told legislators from his ruling Liberal Party that he would use that 1988 Emergencies Act, which allows the federal government to override the provinces and authorize special temporary measures to ensure security during national emergencies. It has only been used once in peacetime by Trudeau's father, former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, who invoked an earlier version of the act in 1970 after Quebec separatists kidnapped a provincial cabinet minister and a British diplomat. The act also allows the government to send in the military, but the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation cited Trudeau as saying he had no plans to do so. Now, Cameron Ahmad, Trudeau's communication director, declined to comment on the report. The Freedom Convoy, quote-unquote, protests started by Canadian truckers opposing a vaccinate or quarantine mandate for cross-border drivers have turned into a rallying point for people opposing the policies of Trudeau's government, covering everything from pandemic restrictions to a carbon tax. A six-day blockade of North America's busiest trade corridor in Windsor, Ontario, ended on Sunday, while protests in Ottawa entered the third week. The protesters have also shut down smaller border crossings in Alberta and Manitoba last week, and on the weekend shut down the Pacific Highway border point in British Columbia. Trudeau has shown reluctance to invoke the Emergencies Act to deal with previous crises, given the potential political fallout from Ottawa interfering in provincial jurisdiction. He was due to speak to the 10 provincial premiers today. Now, Ontario Premier Doug Ford, a Conservative, who has not always enjoyed good relations with Trudeau, told reporters the protests could not be tolerated. "We cannot have people creating chaos at our borders, interrupting trade with the rest of the world," he said. Now, Ford spoke after announcing that Ontario, the most populous province, would this week remove pandemic-related capacity limits on many businesses and plan to remove proof of vaccination requirements in the province from March 1st. Well, removal of vaccine mandates is one of the key demands of protesters who have used trucks to block many streets in downtown Ottawa, which is much to the fury of residents. A leak site said it has been given reams of data about the donors, the protests after the fundraising platform popular with supporters of the movement allegedly suffered in a hack. So this is really compelling. This was written by Amran Abukar, editing by Paul Simao and Nick Zeminski. One second here. Now let's look at what goes on in Mexico. The U.S. avocado blow caps, tough week for Mexican president. Well, a U.S. decision to suspend avocado shipments from a violent Mexican state sealed a challenging week for President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, affectionately known as AMLO, A-M-L-O, whose approval rating suffered an unusual dip in a tracking poll published on Sunday. López Obrador, whose still robust popularity has been more resilient than most global leaders, has this month become embroiled in a war of words with a critical journalist over his reporting on the lifestyle of one of the president's sons. On Friday, the president devoted a chunk of his daily news conference to criticizing journalist Carlos Loret de Mola and named his salary just a day after authorities had confirmed the fifth killing of a media professional in Mexico this year. He's gone from being against the system to I am the system, said Roy Campos, head of polling firm Consulta Mitofsky, whose tracking poll this weekend showed support for López Obrador taking its biggest daily drop in nearly 2 years. The poll published on Sunday shows the left-leaning López Obrador with an approval rating of 61.2%, 0.6 percentage points lower than on Saturday and 1.5 points lower than a week earlier. López Obrador argues that Loret is part of entrenched interests, resisting his project of making Mexico a fairer society, but is singling out of the journalist at a time of heightened sensitivity about the profession has stirred unease. Loret said the revelations had put him in danger and that López Obrador was angry because his reporting on his son's apparent expensive lifestyle sat awkwardly with the image of personal austerity the president has projected. On Saturday, without mentioning Loret, the U.S. Embassy in Mexico said it was, quote, dismayed, end quote, by the situation journalists faced in the country, pointing to the latest killing. Later in the day, the Mexican government said the United States had temporarily suspended avocado shipments on security grounds from the western state of Michoacán, the country's top producing region, which has long been plagued by gang violence. The U.S. Embassy said the U.S. avocado inspection program in Michoacán had been suspended pending a review of the security situation. Though exports are not blocked, expect all avocados being sent to the United States, it noted. Michoacán's governor, Alfredo Ramírez, pledged to get the suspension lifted quickly, and Mexican media said he had agreed to meet U.S. officials in the coming days for that purpose. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, López Obrador, for the second time in under a month, received a visit from a top U.S. government official flagging investor concerns about Mexico's plans to strengthen state control of its energy market. The country is already facing economic headwinds as figures published late last month showed that Mexico slipped into a technical recession at the end of last year. Now, López Obrador has set a referendum for April 10 for the public to vote on whether he should see out the rest of his term, which is due to conclude at the end of September 2024. Now, political analysts say there is almost no chance he will lose, and many opposition politicians have distanced themselves from the referendum as unnecessary. Now, the president has argued it is important that he be held to account by the public. And reporting on this was through Thomson Reuters, Dave Graham, editing by Bill Burkrot and Diane Kraft. Now, let's see what else is going on the world stage, as they say. Bear with me a moment. Okay. One second. This is interesting. A Peru community is going to restart a blockade of Las Bambas, a mine road. Neighbors are paused for a protest. Out of Lima, we hear that a Peruvian community said on social media on Sunday that it will restart a road blockade against MMG's Las Bambas mine even as a second community agreed to a 45-day truce in its blockade. Las Bambas, which produces 2% of the world's copper supply, has said it will have to suspend production on February 20 if the road is not cleared by then. The threat leaves Las Bambas still at a risk of suspending operations even as the road being cleared on Sunday. Leaders in the Capacmaca district agreed to lift their blockade for 45 days following a meeting with the new prime minister, Aníbal Torres. And minutes after the truce, leaders from Ocoporac district, which briefly blocked the road as well this week, published their own statements. Quote, good for our brothers in Capacmaca. Meanwhile, Las Bambas will not pass through Coporac. The Coporac Defense Front said in a message on Facebook. Now, Roger Kondo, a member of the front, told Reuters that the road is currently clear, but that they will meet on Monday to plan the blockade. The road leading up to Las Bambas is a flashpoint of protests. Dozens of impoverished Andean communities lie along the winding 400-kilometer dirt road, who have often complained the mine's trucks pollute the environment while the company has failed to improve their quality of life. Both Capacmaca and Coporac are demanding that Las Bambas contribute more to their respective communities. Since opening in 2016, the mine road has been blocked for over 400 days by several different groups affecting the mine's copper output. Caves have become a major headache for the leftist government of Pedro Castillo, which has promised to prioritize the needs of marginalized Peruvians, but also requires mining tax revenue to fund social programs. Las Bambas alone represents 1% of the country's gross domestic product, and already suspended operations in December because of a blockade. And reporting on this also by Thomson Reuters is by Marcelo Cochabrun, editing by Grant McCool. So, one second. This is very interesting. In Guatemala's Supreme Court, the court itself stripped an anti-corruption judge of immunity. From Guatemala City, we hear that Guatemala's highest court announced on Wednesday it had revoked immunity from prosecution for Judge Pablo Citumulu, a prominent anti-graft crusader in the latest setback in the fight against corruption in the Central American nation. Citumulu is a judge in the country's high-risk courts, which were created after the United Nations-backed Anti-Corruption Commission, CICIG, pushed reforms to investigate organized crime and corruption. He has faced a slew of legal challenges that he regards as revenge for some of his high-level rulings, which have involved a former leader and top officials. Last week on Wednesday, the Supreme Court decided by a majority to revoke his immunity, clearing the way for him to be investigated over a traffic-related incident from 2019. Supreme Court's move comes after other prominent anti-corruption judges and officials had been removed from their posts, jailed, or pushed into exile. Citumulu was among a handful of judges in Guatemala's high-risk courts who submitted a formal complaint to the public prosecutor's office last year, saying they were being persecuted and harassed by unidentified armed individuals. In 2013, he handed down an 80-year-old sentence for genocide to the deceased former dictator Efrain Rios Montt. The sentence was later overturned. 5 years later, Citumulu also sentenced former Vice President Rosana Baldetti, to 15 years in prison for corruption. Last year, he drew praise from the United States Ambassador to Guatemala, William Popp, who congratulated him for, quote, being a fundamental pillar for a democratic state, end quote. Reporting on this by Thompson Reuter is by Sophia Menchu, editing by Simon Cameron Moore. Unbelievable. And so it goes. 1 second here. And this is very interesting, for sure. This is with regard to Brazil's lower house. They've approved a pesticide bill, and they have sent it to the Senate. From Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, Brazil's lower house approved on Wednesday a bill seeking to loosen controls on pesticide approval and use in one of the world's largest agricultural producers, returning it to lawmakers in the Senate for their consideration. Now, the proposal has been dubbed the poison pill by critics who say it paves the way for more dangerous pesticides to be used in one of the world's top exporters of beef, chicken, soy, and coffee. Supporters, including the lower house of powerful agribusiness bloc, deny it would be dangerous, arguing it cuts red tape for approvals and provides more transparency. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is a big backer of the country's agricultural sector and has sought to peel back environmental protections during his time in office. Appetite for the bill has grown in recent weeks as Brazilian soy and corn producers have struggled to secure supplies of pesticides. Well, the companies which deliver those products have said they are battling production bottlenecks in China and global logistics headaches. In a joint statement on Tuesday, soybean grower group Aprosoya Brasil and corn lobby Abramilho said they had received complaints from growers across the South American nation about the unexpected cancellation of deliveries of the herbicide atrazine, which is used to control weeds. In January, a shortage of DECAT led soybean growers to request government permission to directly import the herbicide, which is mainly used as a desiccant to aid in harvesting. Reporting on this by Maria Carolina Marcelo, editing by Karishma Singh, and Clarence Fernandez of the Thomson Reuters Group. Okay, now let's just look at some other issues. Bear with me a moment. 1 second. Okay, 1 second here. We've got other issues. We're fine here. Needed to check. Okay. One moment. Where are we? All right, 1 second. One second here. Where are we? Sadly, unfortunately, Prince Charles' wife Camilla has tested positive for COVID-19. Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall, has tested positive for COVID-19 4 days after her husband, Prince Charles, was confirmed to be infected with the coronavirus, the couple's office said on Monday. Clarence House said Camilla was self-isolating. Charles has been isolating since he tested positive on Thursday, but Camilla had continued with public engagements while taking daily tests. Both Charles, who's 73, and 74-year-old Camilla are triple vaccinated. Now, Charles, who is heir to the British throne, previously contracted the coronavirus in March of 2020 during the first wave of the pandemic. Charles is believed to have met with his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, early last week when both were at Windsor Castle. Buckingham Palace hasn't said whether the 95-year-old queen has tested positive, though it said last week she was displaying symptoms. The queen, who reached a milestone of 70 years on the throne on February 6th, marked her platinum jubilee by expressing her wish for Camilla to be known as Queen Consort when Charles becomes king. The announcement was a major vote of confidence in Camilla, who married Charles in 2005 and was initially shunned by fans of his late first wife, Princess Diana. The British public has since warmed to her down-to-earth style and sense of humor. Camilla has taken on roles at more than 100 charities focusing on a wide range of issues, including promoting literacy, supporting victims of domestic violence, and helping the elderly. So very, very compelling stuff. Let's move on. Second. This is very interesting. Out of Washington, D.C., we hear, that one eye is on the midterms and the Dems ease up on their approach to the virus. People are tired, quote-unquote, said Georgia Senator Ralph, Raphael Warnock, in the opening ad for his reelection campaign. There's not a face mask to be seen in the Democrats' video montage of scenes across Georgia, as he goes on to say that people are wondering when things will get back to normal, and at the same time not knowing what normal even means anymore. The ad reflects a shifting narrative on COVID-19 restrictions across the country. Democrats are now increasingly supportive, easing mandates as they struggle to address voter frustration with a lingering pandemic. They're hoping a shift in policy could serve to blunt incoming political attacks with the midterm elections. When control of Congress is at stake, now less than 9 months away, but their appeals for a return to normalcy, both in symbols and practice, are putting new pressure on President Joe Biden. More than a year after he was sworn into office, pledging to bring about an end to the pandemic, the virus's persistence has taken a toll on Biden's approval in the midterm election year as COVID-19 restrictions and mask-wearing requirements move to the forefront of the nation's culture wars. After months of sparring with Republican governors for standing in the way of public health measures like face coverings and social distancing, the sudden shift on the part of Democrats in recent days has caught White House officials off guard and left them seemingly out of sync with their own party. So while the Center for Disease Control and Prevention continues to recommend labor masking in more than 99% of the country, even Democrat states from New York to California began easing mandates for the public, and New Jersey announced plans to roll back its face covering requirements in schools. So that's the story there. Bear with me a moment as we move on. 1 second. All right, one moment here. To see what else we can pick up with you now. Okay, 1 second. The story of late is that Russia is using the Nord Stream 2 as a geopolitical weapon, Zelensky warns Germany's Scholz. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday told Germany, Germany's visiting Chancellor Olaf Scholz, that Russia was wielding its Nord Stream 2 gas line as a geopolitical weapon. The controversial energy link bypassing Ukraine has been a growing irritant in Germany's relations with Washington and Kiev. We have certain disagreements in our assessments of the Russia-Germany energy link, Zelensky had said, after talks with Scholz in Kiev. We clearly understand that it is a geopolitical weapon. Russia has completed the building of the pipeline, which runs under the Baltic Sea, but German regulators are yet to approve its use. U.S. President Joe Biden has warned that he would find a way to bring an end to the project should Russia invade Ukraine. Without mentioning Nord Stream 2 by name, Scholz said that, quote, no one should doubt the determination and preparedness of Berlin to punish Russia in case of attacks, in case it attacks its neighbor. We will act then, and we will be very far-reaching with our measures that will have a significant impact on Russia's economic development opportunities. So very, very big, to say the least, you know, the response. So it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. All right, let's look at some other things that you may find of interest. Bear with me a moment. One second. This is interesting as it comes from the United Nations. It's from their climate chief, says that the stakes have never been higher, quote unquote, in a fight against global warming. So the stakes in the fight against global warming are higher than ever, the United Nations climate science chief said on Monday, as nearly 200 nations met to finalize what is sure to be a harrowing report on climate impacts. The need for the working group to report has never been greater because the stakes have never been higher. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC chair, Hersung Lee, said in a live video cast. Species extinction, ecosystem collapse, mosquito-borne disease, deadly heat, water shortages, and reduced crop yields are already measurably worse due to rising temperatures. Just in the last year, the world has seen a cascade of unprecedented floods, heat waves, and wildfires across four continents. All these impacts will accelerate in the coming decades, even if the carbon pollution driving climate change is rapidly brought to heel. The IPCC report is likely to warn. A crucial 40-page summary for policymakers, distilling underlying chapters, totaling thousands of pages and reviewed line by line, is to be made public on February 28th, in 2 weeks' time. This is a real moment of reckoning, said Rachel Klitus, climate and energy policy director at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Quote, this is not just more scientific projections about the future, she told Agence France-Presse ahead of the two-week plenary. This is about the extreme event and slow onset disasters that people are experiencing right now. The report will also underscore the urgent need for adaption. Climate speak, which means preparing for devastating consequences that can no longer be avoided, according to an early draft seen by Agence France-Presse back in 2021 in some cases. This means that adapting to intolerably hot days, flash flooding and storm surges have become a matter of life and death. While the growth in climate impacts is far outpacing our efforts to adapt to them, said Inga Andersen, head of the United Nations Environment Program, noting that climate change threatens to become a major driver of species lost. IPCC assessments, this will be the sixth since 1990, are divided into three sections, each with its own volunteer working group of hundreds of scientists. In August 2021, the first installment on physical science found that global heating is virtually certain to pass 1.5 degrees Celsius and 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, probably within a decade. Earth's surface has warmed 1.1 degrees centigrade since the 19th century. We have been doping the atmosphere with fossil fuels, World Meteorological Organization Chief Petteri Talas said on Monday, comparing the results of the enhanced performance of Olympic athletes who used banned substances. The 2015 Paris deal calls for capping global warming as well below 2 degrees centigrade and ideally 1.5 degrees centigrade. This report is sure to reinforce this more ambitious goal. It will likewise underscore the vulnerability to extreme weather events, even when they are made worse by global warming, can be reduced by better planning and preparedness, according to the draft seen by Agence France-Presse. This is not only true in the developing world, noted Imperial College professor Federica Otto, pointing to massive flooding in Germany last year and that killed scores and caused billions in damage. Even without global warming, there would have been a huge rainfall event in the densely populated geography where the rivers flood very easily, said Otto, a premier in the science of quantifying the extent to which climate change makes extreme weather. Reports also likely to highlight dangerous tipping points, invisible temperature trip wires in the climate system for irreversible and potentially catastrophic change. Some of them, such as the melting of permafrost housing twice as much carbon as in the atmosphere, could fuel global warming all on their own. There is a finite set of choices we can make that would move us productively into the future, said Clark University professor Edward Carr, a lead author of one of the report's chapters. Every day we wait and delay. Some of these choices get harder or go away. Unbelievable. So, yeah, those are the issues. Very, very compelling. Well, here we are. It's about 12 minutes to the end of our time slot with you, but it's time for us to say goodbye because we have no more news to share. So all the best, care, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye.